welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. And I'm joined by my producer and co-host, Lee Canner. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. What's happening in the land of Radio X over there?
We're getting ready. It's the last week in the studio, ready to move to our new studio to start 2009 off in the new digs. You got a chance to check it out?
I did. Swanky digs. Pull right up, and you can see the lake and have the big big lobby. You got call-in guests over there? What's happening? You're a busy guy.
Remember to silence your cell phone.
Oh, I see that big sign on the wall.
Yes, exactly. You told me to press record, but it was the cell phone. Yeah, so we're excited about getting over there. We're getting all the furniture in, and we're going to move the audio equipment later this week.
All right. And the High Velocity Radio Show is going to take a couple of weeks off and enjoy the family, but we'll be back strong that first Monday of the new year, I guess. I don't know what day that is, but we'll be here.
Yes, we will. And anything with you? Anything other than helping me move this weekend?
Well, yeah, man, I got a ton of things going. About a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, I was contemplating, what should I be doing with my time? You know, I'm the speed guy. I'm supposed to model this behavior, right? Producing better results in less time.
Practicing thinking, what you're preaching.
Well, I was trying to weigh, cold call or plan a party? You know, which should I do to drive our business?
I wonder
strategy?
What you picked, Stone.
Well, you know, I went for the party.
Really?
And then I started with the party, and then so that I could get a little bit of funding and sponsorship from the Desai Group, who are the good sponsors of this show and where I get my check every few weeks. In order to do that, we also built in a workshop session, Innovation Summit, on February the 19th. But where I'm spending a lot of time and just having a ball is in organizing the Timmy Awards, Atlanta's the year's most innovative.
Oh.
For 2008. And we're going to have the Innovation Summit there on the 19th. And then I rented a 32-passenger, fur-lined, adult beverage-stocked, four-flat-screen bus to shuttle those participants and any other
wherever they'd like to go.
Wherever, anywhere they want to go, but the spot of choice, I think, is going to be the Timmy Awards party.
The after party up at
Rome, Atlanta. So I've been busy making those calls and having a lot of fun putting that together.
So we need some nominees. Is that where we're at?
We do. We're going to open nominations up Wednesday, December the 17th. And in between now and then, if you just can't wait, shoot me an email at stone@decide.com and we'll get you filled in. And then we should have the entire website that describes everything that you ever wanted to know about the Timmy Awards. We're going to try to have that up before the big fat man with a long white beard shows up on the 25th.
And when does the nomination period end?
You know, I hadn't decided that yet. When should we end it?
What, a month before?
No, I mean, we don't need that much time.
The day before?
We work fast. We'll let you know.
The morning.
Right. Right now, we just want to have plenty of nominations of people that that you feel have truly been innovative. And I did take a look at the website last night. It's not up yet, but I'm kind of working with the designers to get it going. And I had some input on the rules that we're setting up. And, I told them. And
you're
now,
not a big rule guy.
You so know, that, I'm not. So I told them, and now it says in print on the site, for crying out loud, it's an innovation award. There are no rules. There are some guidelines, one of which is speed will be rewarded. So the sooner the nomination comes in, that will gain you some favor with the judges.
That's right.
And another one is this is not a creativity award. This is an innovation award. And
so you defined innovation?
Yes, we did, in a very succinct way. Innovation is creativity with a job to do, and that job is to create value for the organization. And so in your nomination, we've made it very clear that you'll want to describe what this nominee has done to genuinely create value. Other than that, there's no rules. We're going to give them an opportunity to submit nominations online. But if they don't want to do that, they can email it. If they don't want to do the online form, they can email it. They can send their personal valet to the Timmy Awards mailing address.
Headquarters.
Timmy Awards HQ. Carrier pigeon. They can do a YouTube video and post it and send us a link. No rules.
Right. But creativity and innovation aren't the same thing.
They're not the same thing. It's been our experience and it's our contention, Lee, that innovation certainly starts with creativity, but it's so much more. It really does require that the organization and the people driving that effort are able to venture that idea, get it funded properly, and commercialized to create value for the organization. And if not commercialized for external value and profit than something that builds the organization up and helps them internally.
In the advertising world, you know, my degree's in advertising. We were taught that it's not creative unless it sells.
That's an excellent point. Absolutely. Well, you know, my degree is in marketing, which is probably why I'm still, to this day, one of the best table tennis players in the state. So that's advertising degree landed you in the radio studio.
It's a logical progression, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Talking to you, people like you.
Well, I couldn't get a job with my marketing degree. I had to, you know, I'm just an old broke down salesperson.
Well, that's what I had to create my own job.
Exactly, yeah, me too. Well, we've got a great guest. In fact, we've got two marvelous guests this morning and very excited about introducing both of them to you. The first is the editor of Strategy Magazine, and his name is Jeff Crane. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Stone.
We are delighted to have you on the show. I've got a ton of questions, and the first one is this. How does someone of your apparent intelligence sit down one day and decide, you know what, I think I'll go in the magazine business? What in the world prompted you to do that?
It's kind of a funny story. What started as a kind of an argument, and one of my colleagues is really what created Strategy. We were, you know, debating on postgraduate school, what do business practitioners have? Do they have, you know, they can go get an additional degree, they can go get certifications, but like many of us find out that, you know, you're running out of time, you don't have access to all the information that you like, and so you're making decisions with limited information. So what we did is we said, well, you know what, it'd be great if somebody could come out with a really concise, consolidated and actionable document that you could just read periodically and keep up with everything within your discipline. Of course, I argued it already existed, and then, well, you know, because I said, we're not that smart. How could we come up with something new and innovative and actually generate cash and add value to both the, you know, readers as well as ourselves? And did a little research, and you know what? There was a gap out there in the market, and hence Strategy.
And so how would you define that gap? What was missing? Because, you know, you go into a Borders or a Barnes & Noble, the shelves are just filled with magazines. My kids are always trying to sell magazines every year to raise money for the school. How would you describe what has been missing in that niche?
Well, there's really two types of publications that are currently distributed, in my opinion. There's one type of business magazine that's basically parading itself. It's really a lifestyle magazine, but they try and trick the readers to believe it's not. Fortune, Forbes, you know, Fast Money, Entrepreneur, they're really just escape reading. It's a rarity that business practitioners can actually learn anything from the publications. And then you go to the other extreme. It's the Harvard Business Review. It's The Economist. And, I mean, frankly, the Harvard Business Review is so dry that no one ever reads it. It's really just a branding tool to sit on people's coffee table. So there's this big gap in the middle that says, okay, well, what if I actually want to learn something and I actually want to learn from real business practitioners? I want to learn what's out of academia and actually apply it and stay current every issue, and that's where ours comes in.
So where do you get your content?
It's from a variety of sources. We review all the top journals every month. So we critique them. There's, you know, anywhere between, you know, about 5 to 10 academic journals for each of the 8 disciplines. We review all those, summarize those succinctly, and then we talk about the ones that are most actionable to the business professional. We also interview consultants. We interview you know, we talk to the regulatory bodies. We also follow up with people who are actually in the field. Because one of the things we found that's most fascinating and for some reason is ignored is that, you know, the Fortune 500 executive group, they make up, what, 0.5% of the business practitioners?
Right.
Well, you can actually learn a heck of a lot from all those other folks who make up 99% of the market. And so what we do is we talk to those people and we say, well, what are you doing to survive? How do you actually drive value from your organization? What do you, you know, those thoughts. And so we kind of marry all that information together, and that's really the genesis of each issue.
Now, can you talk a little bit about how you brought this from an idea standpoint to market and got into all the bookstores and the distribution that you have right now?
Sure. What we did is we said, you know, my partner Matt and I, we kind of laid out what we thought would add value and what would add value to me if I wanted to have a product like this. We put together a beta. We sent it around to colleagues, business practitioners, contacts we had from former lives, and we got some very constructive feedback. Said, "Hey, you know, you guys totally missed the mark with this stuff. Hey, this is, I can actually get where you're going." And at the end of that, December of last year, we had a product that, you know what, we got a lot of great feedback on, and we thought we had something. So what we decided to do is we said, okay, well, let's put together a management team and actually build a real product and try and take it to distribution and circulation. So we did that. We hired a team, and then we also hired a small firm to go pitch our idea. Now, granted, we didn't have a real product at this point. It was just an excerpt to go and present to Barnes & Noble, Borders, and the top distribution companies in the U.S. And we said, and our strategy was, well, if we can take this, present it to these folks, and not only will they agree to listen to us, but they'll agree to carry it without having any publishing experience and in a market that most people would argue is already hypersaturated, then we're on to something. Well, we did that, and we were able to negotiate a 3-year distribution contract, and we are on newsstands across the nation in Canada. So,
wow.
So here we are.
So, now, how do you grow, like, the subscription base? Is it just strictly off of bookstores?
No, we have several different marketing strategies, one of which we work with magazines.com. They're, you know, one of the top, you know, websites that people can go
to. A portal for magazines?
Mm-hmm. So they can go there. They can also go to strategymagazine.com and get a subscription. We have a newsletter that goes out that drives subscribers. And in addition, there's our insertion cards that are in every publication where people can sign up, and we get those in the mail every day.
You mentioned the term hypersaturated, and it occurs to me, or it did when we were talking about getting you on the show. You know, isn't print dead? And how do you integrate these other media with print? Mm-hmm. I'm interested to understand the thought process behind that, and how people, if they do,
interact. Yeah, what's the strategy?
Yeah. Well, what we're trying to do is we want to develop a business community for what I'll call the actionable business practitioners. They're the folks that, you know, they make up 20% of most organizations, and they're driving 80% of the work. So a lot of times they're the folks who start their own organization. They build a company up from the grassroots, or they work their way up and actively manage their career. So what our goal is to get Strategy Magazine, the print copy, out there and become just another tool in everybody's toolbox, number one. Number two is we're also trying to grow our online presence as well, because the value of that long term is to be that forum where business practitioners can ask questions like anonymously and have no issue or fear of negative feedback. Because let's say, for example, you're a senior manager, maybe you're a managing director at a firm. You know, if you go into a meeting and ask a question, a lot of organizations might penalize you for that. And so what we want the online community to be is, okay, well, I've read all this stuff, I've learned about it. I need to ask some more questions of people who've maybe done it and failed, or done it and been successful, and I want to ask it in a safe, anonymous environment. And that's really the next level of strategy, and it complements the print publication.
So what's the most fun about your work, and what's the biggest pain?
I'd say the most fun about what I do is I don't really care what other publishing companies are doing and their strategy. We're not like them. We're never going to be like them. And frankly, we can publish exactly what we think and take an opinion. That's one of the biggest things that irks me about reading everything else, is that they're so afraid of being wrong. And I'm okay with being wrong.
Right. If you're not wrong, then, you know, occasionally you're not trying hard enough.
Exactly. And, you know, I'd say, you know, the least fun about what I do is, you know, it's balancing the I'm obviously very passionate about my firm, but then it's also the struggle. You don't want to have it bounce too much against your personal life. So that's the hardest thing is, you know, when you're passionate about your family and you're passionate about your job, is finding that balance, because, you know, there's only so many hours in the day.
Now, is there anything surprised you since you've begun this?
Yeah, that we'd get this far.
So you were betting the under on your success?
Well, you know, honestly, when I looked back and we were sitting here coming up with the idea, we said, what are the odds that I mean, come on, it's the market's saturated. What are the math odds that we could actually come up with a new idea, number one? Number two is you could pitch it to somebody that, you know, I didn't even go to the meeting to present because that was part of the deal. We said we don't want to be there and present because we felt that realistically, if you play the telephone game right and you have someone standing and pitching your idea for you and they can actually close it, That was part of our strategy. So it was huge risk. And
so who pitched it?
It was our consulting group, our magazine consulting group up in New Jersey. So they went and took our beta. I mean, they took our CD. They took it. They presented it to Barnes & Noble Borders.
So Barnes & Noble didn't want to meet the team?
Actually, no. They had relationships with them. But, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
but they didn't want to meet you.
They did want to meet us. Yeah, no, they absolutely did. But we felt that whenever you're like presenting a new idea and everything, we wanted the idea to stand and have merit
by itself.
Yeah. And then, that was, I'd say, one of the things. And then, you know, just as we've grown in an organization, I mean, it's been amazing, but it's been a ride.
Is there an interview that really stands out for you so far that you really particularly enjoyed?
I'd say that we had a I'm always amazed at the varying levels of individuals. One of them was a foreman, basically, you know, managing small teams, and I'd say that, you know, his title, you know, isn't that big of a deal. The size of the firm that he's a part of isn't very big, but you know, when he was talking about leadership and talking about, you know, managing his team and, you know, what he does and how he balances the cash aspect from, you know, all the other impacts, I was really impressed with him. So, that's one of the things that I think is important about what we're trying to do with the Money Talks is it's not so much about the person or the title, but it's really about the knowledge that they can pass and imbibe upon the next person. So,
because the magazine isn't solely just theoretical. It's there's a big practical element to this as well, right?
Absolutely. Because, like, when I say that we review academia, we don't talk about it if we don't think you can apply it. So in every, let's say there's six academic journals for accounting. We'll read all six, and there's usually 6 to 10 articles in each one. And, you know, usually maybe one is applicable. And we'll only give it one or two or three sentences within our publication. So that's how concise and boiled down and it's got to be applicable to the business practitioner. Because if we can't add value and we can't tell people how they could actually potentially use this in their career, then we're basically wasting their time like every other print publication.
Well, and you take sourcing, this idea of sourcing, to the nth degree. It seems like every time you reference something, we can go online or through some other means and find out, you know, document where it came from, learn more about it, yeah?
Absolutely. So, because the theory is that, you know, business practitioners are super busy. They don't have time to go on an Easter egg hunt through the business magazine.
Yeah.
They just want to learn, and if you can do that and give them exactly what they want, they'll be happy, and then you know what, they're gonna say, hey, you know what, this may apply to me, and oh look, it was from this university, this is it, all right, hey, I'll go grab my analyst or I'll go do it myself, and they know where they need to go to do the next step. So very clear path for execution.
Oh yeah. And I know you're all about substance, but it's one of the most attractive publications I've seen in a long time. You must have the best art department in town.
We are very proud of our team. I mean, we're fortunate. We've been able to bring on some real talent. Mavian, she's great, and Emily, and you know, and Matt, and everybody.
With a name like Mavian, I mean,
has to be good.
You got to be artsy, right?
Yeah.
What, is she going to be an accountant?
Right.
I don't think so.
Meet my accountant, Mavian.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you should have seen the beta that we put together. It was ugly, guys. I mean, you know.
Everybody should do what they do.
Exactly.
I'm delegating to make it something work.
Yeah, you wouldn't have. I mean, it was ugly, but you know the content was there, so we had at least that going for us.
So, what's next for strategy? You got some interesting interviews coming up.
Yeah, we have some interesting interviews coming up. One of the concepts that I think we're toying about making a feature for our upcoming CEO Corner is, you know, the concept of, okay, there's a lot of, you know, products and services out there, but a lot of the complaints that the business practitioners have is that, well, okay, you pitch me this product, looks great, got a great presentation that I can take to the board of directors or I can take to the owner, but okay, well, then you leave and I'm left with nothing, okay? Well, one of the individuals we're talking to, Daryl, is his strategy and how his firm operates is that they actually tie their fee into successful implementation. So super actionable. I think everybody can learn a lot from that. And based on the current, you know, financial climate, I wouldn't be surprised if we're seeing more of that in 2009 because – you know, we're all looking to actually deliver results, not just talk about them. So
imagine that.
You know, hey.
ROI is coming back in style.
Yeah, it's you actually got to make money now and balance the cash and not just give everybody money. So
well, maybe it'll catch on. Who knows?
Yeah. That's right. You know, maybe, you know. I have faith in capitalism still.
But this is a firm that's putting their own skin in the game.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Like, they're putting their credibility on the line. And, I mean, frankly, I think that bodes well for them long term because, you know, the companies that just kind of fly in and fly out, then, you know, that only works so long, and especially in a cash-happy environment where anybody can borrow at, you know, a couple percentage points and not worry about long-term impacts. But now when people are actually managing their balance sheet and managing their bank relationships and banks just aren't printing money anymore, you know, you're going to have to come back with solid deals to drive value.
Well, I'd certainly much rather go to my shareholders or my CEO and say, look, the firm that we're looking at working with is putting their own skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got – so I'm really interested to hear that. I definitely want to look forward to reading that issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that'll be on newsstands here soon. And then another big thing that we're excited about is we're working with all the universities that do the top 100 list out of academia. So it's going to be the top 100 actionable things that have come out of the academia in the last year. So
in each of the categories you cover?
It's the top across the discipline.
Across, all
so,
of them.
Yeah. So, and one of the reasons why we decided to do it that way is most business practitioners, they've got different things in their belt. You know, if you are a CEO or a senior manager or an entrepreneur, you really got to know at least some level of information about multiple disciplines. You're not just an accountant. You're not just a CEO. You're not just a entrepreneur because, I mean, frankly, you know, most entrepreneurs are sitting down with their accountants, understanding the books. Okay, how much can I borrow on my revolver to kind of get through this pay cycle? You know, CEO corners are concerned about debt covenants and what is an EBITDA to debt ratio. So, you know, to try and, you know, force people down specific, you know, paths, I don't think makes sense. That's why we decided to do a crossover.
Very exciting. So where can our listeners pick up the magazine?
They can pick it up at Barnes & Noble, Borders. If they happen to be in Canada, they can pick it up at Chapters or Books A Million here domestically.
And people that might want to purchase advertising space or just learn more about the magazine, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Best way to contact me, they can contact me via email. It's jeff.crane@strategymagazine.com, and it's C-R-A-N-E. Or they can contact me directly at 813-545-2432, or you know, check us out online at www.strategymagazine.com.
And you know our listeners are particularly innovative. What if they have an idea for a story and want to submit that?
Absolutely. We have an online login where they can submit a story or just shoot an email to our editor, and we go through and we review all those and pick the most actionable ones, and that's what we're going to, you know, want to publish. So they get a call back.
Wouldn't that be cool to be able to email all your friends and say, look, this was my idea.
Yeah,
right?
I did that.
Yeah.
And that's how you open every article, right? This idea was presented by Stone Payton.
There you go. Absolutely.
Jeff, it has been delightful having you on the show. Before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show.
Okay.
And what we do is we ask each guest to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career, and really more importantly, what they've learned from it. Could you do that for us?
Sure. I'd say that biggest mistake I've ever made was, you know, not being very clear with specifics, like when I had deliverables and then not firing fast enough. You know, whenever you're trying to deliver results, and if you just kind of – if you're not clear and you don't have all of the key deliverables outlined, then it just doesn't work out for everybody. So with most organizations – in this climate, you just really got to be clear with your team. And if things aren't working out, it's best for both parties to say, hey, listen, this is really what we need. This is what we need from you to be successful. This is what we're going to give to you in return. And here are the specific steps. And if you're not clear, then it just draws on and draws on, and they're not happy. And I personally struggled with that before, so it's not fun.
Well, yeah, but you knew what you meant.
Yeah.
They don't need to do what you say. They need to do what you meant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know, and it all boils back to that, you know, communication is the key, and I obviously was a poor communicator in that circumstance.
Well, you heard it right here from Jeff Crane. Clarity is a key strategy. Jeff, thanks so much
for
joining us. Hey,
thanks, Stone. Thanks, Lee.
Hey, can you hang out with us for a little while we talk to our next guest?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Well, our next guest is from a training, consulting, and publication firm, a change leadership firm out of Durango, Colorado, but they have a client base worldwide. Her name is Erin Patla. She is the, I don't know, we'll have to ask her what her title is, but I think she's a VP or Director of Business Development. Erin, are you on the line?
I am. Good morning, Stern. Thank you very much for having me.
You are more than welcome, and here's your chance to tell the whole world what your title is, because I forgot it.
Well, you are actually spot on. I am the Director of Business Development here at Being First.
Okay, and Being First, to make sure that I'm characterizing this properly, is a change leadership training consulting firm, correct?
That is correct. We actually have an array of services and products that we offer, everything from education and training, consulting and coaching, and definitely a set of resources and a methodology, all to support leaders and consultants in designing, planning, and implementing change, specifically transformational change. And you are correct, our senior consultants do work with Fortune 1000 clients, nonprofits, and government agencies around the world.
Well, I already know all I need to know because I hear a really delightful accent. Where is that accent from?
It is an Australian accent.
That's got to help sales.
It does, yes, it does. I have a lot of people that ask me if I am from the South, and I just can't help myself but answering them yes. Probably a little further south than most of them are expecting, but yes, I am from the south of here.
So is that one of the changes people can do, is maybe change their accent to help them, help their company grow?
Well, it's one of the changes I certainly am going through, probably the opposite way to what most people would expect. But, hey, I'm always prepared to give people Australian accent lessons if they're interested.
Can you talk a little bit about what exactly change means, like the difference between change management, change leadership?
Absolutely. You know, that's a question often that our clients and people that read our articles and experience some of our resources ask us first of all, because the term change leadership is certainly new in the change execution arena, and it is something that we say that we specialize in. And, you know, the focus of change management, so looking at change management, typically the focus is heavily put on implementation. It's about process planning and figuring out what support is needed to implement a change. So when it comes to people, the focus tends to lean towards overcoming resistance and what some organizations have called the onboarding of its people. Whereas change leadership takes more of a strategic approach to change. We say that by creating an overarching change strategy and a process plan that ensures the right content, people, and process dynamics for the change from start to finish. So that's from hearing the wake-up call for change through the planning, design, and onto implementation stages of the change. You know, organizations can be less reactive to how they execute change and more proactive. Their results obviously then can be executed in less time, with less cost, and less negative impact to the organization. I think a principal context really that sets change leadership apart from change management is rather than implementing a planned and systemic change that responds to needs that are identified in real time, change leaders need to set the conditions up for success for single projects as well as the entire enterprise-wide change agenda. You know, they need to shape change strategy that's going to ensure optimal engagement of stakeholders and the capabilities of the organizational resources to produce the desired outcomes of the change. And, of course, then their roadmap for implementation is going to need to be designed so that it can respond quickly and rapidly course-correct as the process continues to evolve over time.
Can you talk a little bit about when you're going in there and having that first meeting, like what's that conversation like?
Quite often it's first of all trying to find out what are the objectives of the change, and what the first place that organizations will always go is maximizing their results, you know, maximizing ROI from change. Make this change successful for us. Tell us how we can make this successful.
But you have to dig deeper than that, right? That doesn't mean anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because we quite often, the first thing we have to do is really dispel the myth that, you know, change can be clearly planned for, that it can be clearly mapped out, that so that your process for implementation is going to go exactly as planned and no room for deviation is really needed. Because in truth, you know, this couldn't be any further from the truth. For the majority of change that we're finding, a lot of organizations assume that the change can be very simply summed up within the box. And that is certainly true for some types of change. There are developmental changes, which are essentially changes within that box, where the rules and the dynamics are going to stay the same, and the new state is simply an enhancement of the old. That is something that can be clearly planned for. Or transitional changes that require an old state to be completely dismantled, an organization to be managed through a transition, and then the new state sort of clearly defined and evolved. Whereas what we are finding more and more in our practice is that organizations are undergoing a third and fundamentally different type of change, and that is transformational change. And what we have to learn to sort of show to our clients and people who are talking to us about what transformational change is that there's two very distinct differences of transformational change to some of these other more easily planned changes. And the first one of those is that their future state is largely unknown at the start of their change process. You know, it can only be created by simply forging forward with a rough compass bearing and an intent to discover what lies ahead. And so the first question we're often asked is, well, if I don't know where I'm going, if I can't see what my future state is, how do I get underway? How do I know which direction to start stepping in? And certainly that's one of the things that we have to help our clients to overcome.
Do you feel that when you're working in this arena that you're dealing with, like, the higher-level executives and it never filters down to the front line?
Largely, we have found the opposite. We are finding that it's organizational development leaders and human resource leaders that are coming to us. You know, these are people, you know, leaders within their organizations who are heavily involved in how their people are affected. They're involved with their culture. They're in touch with the culture of their organization. And this is, again, a fundamental difference of transformation, is that it's quite a radical change for the organization, such a radical change that there are shifts of mindset amongst leaders and employees that are needed in order for the future state to be realized. And it's typically the organizational development and HR folks that are realizing this, and they are coming to us to help them support them for their executives to see that change is not simply something that can be, you know, easily defined. It's something that they have to really get into the culture of their organization and talk about.
So you're saying that change can happen from the bottom up?
Absolutely. Now, it can happen that way. It is much easier when it happens from the top down. Now, the executives may not always be the ones that are open and understanding this idea of transformation that needs to have their engagement of their people behind it, but it's essential that the leaders are shown the light, that your executives are brought on board, because typically, you know, change management has always been a support service that executives ask for. A very essential part of change leadership is it needs to be something that the executives are leading, because it does require this level of engagement from them to be able to show their employees what the mindset shifts and the dynamics of behavior are, and they need to model those from the top. So the message sometimes does come from the front lines, but it's very important from early on in the change, when you're first setting your change strategy up, that your executives are brought on board so that they can lead the change the way that they need to.
So what are some of the mistakes that you see clients making when you first go into a client system?
That's a great question. You know, obviously there's this over-reliance on project management and change management without having a strategic approach to change. Organizations are often wasting time and resources implementing change without having a strategic goal. So certainly that's a mistake that we often encounter. One that is not always easy to identify but that is very common is organizations are not tying the purpose of their change to their business strategy. You know, in this day and age, and certainly in this economy, you know, change is something that organizations are constantly undergoing, and without a filter to tell them where the lines are drawn around the spending of resources, time, and money implementing change, they can often find themselves in a place where now they have to start trimming some of the fat off the sides. And so without identifying what are the highest leverage changes that need to occur based on the business strategy and based on the objectives of the business, that way organizations can assign the resources to those highest leverage changes and certainly in the end just set themselves up for a greater level of success. So certainly that's a mistake that we find is quite common. Another one, you know, would be proceeding without having a clear change strategy. And change strategy covers everything from governance and decision making. What are the values and guiding principles going to be for the change? How are we going to, what are the separate initiatives that are going to occur within this change? And how do we need to integrate them to make sure they all step towards the common goal of the overarching change? You know, what are our engagement strategies going to be? How are we going to communicate to our people? All of that is wrapped up in what we call change strategy. And often we find that companies are proceeding either without a clear change strategy or with one that doesn't match the type of change that's being executed.
Imagine that.
You know, finding yourself in a situation, again, where you're reacting to something that has surfaced around not knowing what your clear governance or decision-making is around a particular thing and having to go back to the beginning. So change strategy is really important to take care of up front.
Erin, it sounds like we could do an entire show just on the mistakes.
We certainly could, and actually with that in mind, I do, you know, Being First has recently published a white paper on what our senior consultants have identified as the 10 most common mistakes made in leading transformation. And certainly, you know, at the end of your show today, I'd love to leave you with my contact information. And if any of your listeners are interested in receiving that white paper, you know, and again, learning from the mistakes of others. Mistakes are made so that we can learn from them, and that's something that Being First takes very seriously in our practices. Let's help others learn from the mistakes we've made and certainly from the mistakes that our clients have made in the past and mistakes we've helped them overcome. So I'd be happy to send that white paper out. Again, that's the 10 most common mistakes made in leading transformation to anyone who's interested in receiving it.
Well, that would be great. I mean, I don't need it myself, but I think our previous guest, Jeff Crane over at Strategy Magazine, I know Lee could use it. So, yeah, we definitely want to get that information.
Thanks.
Great.
Absolutely.
I also understand that, in fact, I more than understand because I've been in and poked around in it a little bit. You have a great many tools, resources, and a very structured, disciplined methodology for actually doing all this stuff that we're waxing eloquent about this morning, and you've got it captured in a web-based interface. Can you tell us more about this this Change Leaders Roadmap thing?
Absolutely. You know, we were just talking about the mistakes that are commonly made, and one that we were finding more and more, certainly in the last decade, is the idea of organizations ignoring the fact that change is a reality. It's a constant reality. It's an ongoing reality. And in order to continue to be successful with change as you go through it in the future, it's really essential that organizations adopt a common methodology, a common approach to change that they can roll out across their entire organization. So it's, you know, it's one thing for us to say, hey, you really need this. It's another thing for us to be able to provide that. And that's exactly what the Change Leaders Roadmap is. It is a process methodology, a plan for executing change that being first our senior consultants have written out of the last 30 years of their experience, you know, leading and facilitating large systems change. And so the Change Leaders Roadmap is based on Being First's nine-phase change process model. It's a model that guides all of the actions that are needed to carry out change strategy. And, of course, it attends to both the people issues of transformation and the process, the execution of the change. And it certainly defines and delineates the pathway that will lead a change effort to heighten success.
And so, but this is available online, right?
It is. And so we have the nine-phase process model, and what we've done is create an online solution based on the organizational construct of these nine phases that provides all of the hands-on, pragmatic tools that are needed to execute the steps in the change process. And so we have rolled this out as an online solution. It's available through individual and organization-wide subscriptions. And it gives change leaders and consultants, certainly project managers and executive audiences, access to all of the resources that are going to help them plan and design their change strategy and then actually execute on the steps in the strategy.
So if I know somebody important like a Lee Cantor or a Jeff Crane with Strategy Magazine, can I get a special deal or a trial or something?
Absolutely. Anybody can actually sign up and get a 30-day free trial. You will be able to access all of the resources in the methodology and certainly resource the tutorials that we have built in to help you understand what the Change Leaders Roadmap is all about, what the resources are about, who they're designed for, and how they're designed to be used. And then certainly if anyone has audiences within their organizations that they want to get a more in-depth hand on the Change Leaders Roadmap, I'm more than happy to speak with them at any time and see if we can extend that trial period and really handhold people to get their feet wet within the methodology. Because once you experience it, you really have a chance to see what it may have to offer your organization, and that's when the true value can really be found.
So if our listeners want to get in touch with you or talk with someone in the organization about maybe engaging one or more of your senior consultants, or maybe if they just want to take a listen to that elegant accent, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, let me give you the web address, first of all, for Being First.
Okay.
So, of course, it's www.beingfirst.com, and that's BEINGFIRST.com. You can call us at 970-385-5100, and I'm more than happy, again, to speak with anyone at any time. So my direct email address is Erin, E-R-I-N, at beingfirst.com.
Terrific. Well, you know, you were really hammering senior executives and organizations and some of the mistakes they were making earlier, and you've got this this white paper report, but we want to rifle in on one more thing before we let you go.
Okay.
Wonder if you'd be willing to share any mistakes that you've personally made in your career and what you've learned from them.
Well, someone once told me that if you're not making mistakes from time to time, you're not trying hard enough.
I don't know where you got an idea like that.
I certainly like to think that I try hard, and I guess the mistakes that I make along the way are an indication of that. Let me see. You know, when I first took on the role of Director of Operations at one time, I felt so responsible for making sure that the operations of the business were running at what I would call maximum efficiency. And it meant that I would feel that responsibility in questioning and challenging the capacity that the organization as a whole and certainly my colleagues and reports within the organization were taking on and were accepting. And especially when I felt that we were overstretching ourselves, giving ourselves unrealistic timelines and goals. And I felt so accountable for helping everyone understand where the line in the sand was drawn, that when I felt that they were taking on board and accepting responsibility for unrealistic commitments, I would want to question and challenge the capacity and certainly would have no concerns doing that in company meetings where we were making these decisions. And what I found is that I often find myself in one-on-one communication with the president of our company, who would suddenly focus on me being the voice that was kind of challenging the limit of expectations that he was wanting to project on the organization. And, you know, even though I had a great relationship with him and, you know, he would trust my judgment in matters of operational capacity, of course, it meant that I really was hurting my colleagues and reports and then the organization as a whole by not letting them, you know, commit themselves to make those decisions and then learn for themselves how they were going to follow through on that commitment, whether it, you know, whether it led them to not failing to meet it or, you know, really pushing themselves and stressing themselves out in order to meet it. You know, and I quickly learned that sometimes it is better to let a colleague fail to meet an unrealistic expectation to which they committed. And even though when one team member, you know, experiences that level of stress and struggle, it does put a strain on the entire organization, in the long run, it is better that the organization experience that, because that's the only way that the organization and the team and the individuals within the team can grow and learn to identify their own lines in the sand and have the courage and confidence to speak up in defense of that line in company meetings and certainly to the president. So that was certainly a mistake I found myself making. And I guess in the long run, I would say it was my first experience in the concept of fair process for myself as well as for the organization. And that's certainly something that I try to do less of these days and see how things will turn out for themselves.
Well, what a great lesson. And if you create an environment like that where you do give them the latitude to skin their own knees, I think you'll probably see that, and it sounds like maybe you've experienced this, that they're emotionally, intellectually equipped, able, and willing to return the learning from those mistakes back to the organization.
Absolutely. And when the individual has a win on that level, the team experiences the win, and then, of course, the big win is the organization as a whole, as the team develops and grows themselves from the inside out. So,
well, there you have it, folks. A marvelous piece of wisdom from Aaron Patlett. Until next week, for Jeff Crane with Strategy Magazine, Lee Cantor and the entire Radio X family, and Aaron Patlett with Being First, and a shout-out to all our friends down under, we'll see you in the fast lane.